720 WGN. It's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. We are hanging out with our friend Scott Catoon today. He's the CEO of Technori and the host of the Technori podcast on WGN Plus. If you have not listened, head over to WGN Plus, get that good app, and check it and all the other podcasts out because it's a good one and it keeps you in the know about all kinds of wonderful startup things happening in Chicago, which I have to say, for a long time, Scott, it seemed like Chicago was the place where we would start and build and get going and then run away to a coast. And I apply that to the business sector as much as I do to comedy and film and, you know, all those things. But we've really started to, just in the last couple of years, it seems like, be a destination place. And I think especially like in biotech and med tech, we're really like people are coming here to do the things now, which is cool. It's not about fleeing anymore.
It's very cool. The reality is we have built an incredible ecosystem in a very short period of time. 1871, you know, didn't really exist. And those who don't know what 1871 is, it's the largest incubator for startups in the entire country, not just in Chicago. There's over 370 some odd companies that are booted out of there. And all of those companies did not have a place to go, which meant we had to go to a coast. You graduate from Northwestern, Chicago, UIC, Loyola, wherever. Where do you go? You don't have the resources. And thankfully, J.B. Pritzker and some of their groups got behind starting 1871. Now Howard Tolman is the CEO. And along with it has popped up MHUB for manufacturers, Matter for healthcare. There's a new fintech one going up in the CME building. Everywhere you turn, even legal, there's a legal incubator that's popping up now as well by the CBA, Chicago Bar Association. It's insane. And ultimately, I think what's making this a big hub, a mecca for tech startups is that you can go to some of the top universities and get started while you're a student versus some of the other areas that it's not quite as easy.
Right. Like, yeah, University of Chicago certainly has put a lot into investing in the community in Chicago. We've had folks from their program on the show before, and they're really, I think they're investing in that in kind of like in the talent that's already here and attracting talent here.
100%. In fact, I mean, to your point about Chicago, University of Chicago, the Polsky Center actually just took on a huge raise of money. I want to say it's like $20 million. It's some crazy amount of money. And they're rebranding everything. So no longer is it just, the exchange. I think they called it the Innovation Exchange back in the beginning. And now it's the Polsky Center for Innovation. And they've got an office that is actually in Edgewater nearby anyway, mm-hmm. That is fantastic. Very cool.
That's really my goal in life is that I want to name a center after myself.
Right?
I maybe have 48 cents in my couch cushions right now, but one of these days I'm going to like name a center.
We can rent a street, you know. We can get our name on one of these streets for like a week, not
for
a long time. Oh,
I was saying for the long haul?
Well, I don't have that kind of money.
I don't either. So who do we have coming to visit with us today and what are they up to?
We've got three pretty cool organizations. I'll call them organizations because one is less a company and more of an organization. The first one is Tidespin, which I am particularly, I guess this is close to my heart, not just because I hate doing laundry and I don't know how to, and I'll admit on the air that my mother still does my laundry. I'm seeing the laugh on Amy's face already. She's like, I'm so glad you didn't tell me that before. Now you know. But at any rate, not only is it that, but what is really cool is it's the first sign, or not the first, but one of the first signs of a very large organization, Tide, which everyone knows, is finally taking an innovation approach from the startups. Rather than internally trying to slowly and methodically build this new product for millennials, they decided, you know what, the people we're targeting are at 1871. We're going to have these team of founders come in under Tidespin or under Tide. We will cover some of the costs and the investment opportunity costs and so forth. And we're going to have you not work here in our building, but work at 1871. And I want to say it's been 9 to 12 months that they've been up and running sort of stealth mode, and now they're out and about. That's
very
cool.
Even being in a different space can really change, I think, especially for a legacy business like that, trying to do something so new, because I think it is so difficult to change culture. It's so difficult to get away from that sense of, well, this is how we do things here.
And you nailed it.
You know, that you have to get to innovate. I think you have to get a little group of people outside of the building physically in order to do that intellectual work that will be different from the way it's always been done at that company.
You hit it on the head. And the other thing that's really interesting with that is who they're aiming after, right? Millennials are not exactly known for like their housekeeping skills and things like that. And so for them to be able to open up at 1871 and develop Tidespin, develop their own culture and mix and match and kind of work with the people who are their target customer, I think will make them be able to run almost in a different a different way than Tide does. So that's definitely one of them, and it's interesting, and I'm sure that the guy coming on, the CMO, will be able to talk more about it. The next one that's really interesting is everyone sees stickers for Spot Hero, and it's the first company ever on our stage, actually. Now they're being disrupted. As a startup, they themselves are being disruptive, and the company is called ParkX. And essentially, it's an Airbnb for parking spots. And so they're going to come on and talk to us a little bit about how that works and things like that, which is exciting. And then the final guest is an organization that spurned up as a result of, shall we say, surprise election results, maybe?
Sure.
And so Rise Movement has been started. Co-founder is Genevieve Thiers, who's been on everybody's show probably, the co-founder of Sitter City and Chime by Sitter City. And they started this as a bipartisan movement to make sure that the tech founders are held accountable for all of the disruption we're doing. Where are the jobs going to come from? Are the founders female and minority represented, and all the other things that I think sometimes people don't think of when they think of a quick moving startup world. So I'm really excited to hear what they're working on.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in that one. You know, that's a topic really close to my heart. I think when we talk about accountability, sometimes we don't really define but what's the verb? What are you actually going to do? So I'm very interested in that one, because sometimes, it's a matter of holding someone accountable, like almost publicly shaming them, like taking to Twitter and making a lot of noise. But sometimes there are actual steps. Sometimes there's, consultant sort of types who will come in and help you get out of that. And, you know, because I think sometimes the problem with workplace diversity and those kind of conversations about inclusion really sometimes come down to, it's difficult to admit your own biases. It's hard to say, I've only had my experience and I can't guess on yours. You've had your experience and I've had mine, and let's just both talk about those two experiences. I think that's a really tough place to be in, but I think we're going to have to get into a place, even to have business conversations, even to have the simplest, I'm not even talking about politics, but just the most basic business conversations to move forward in the way that we need to now. I think we're going to have to get to that point where we can't walk in the door saying, I can guess what your experience has been like. We have to just say, I've only had my own experience.
Well, that's the thing that, you know, Technoria also took a big thing to say that we wanted to, and we don't make a big fuss about it. It's just a reality. Mm-hmm. We try to make sure all of our stage and events and showcases and shows and so forth are 50% represented by females and 30% minority represented, because that's what the world we live in looks like. And if you don't make everything that's in front of you look like the world around you, sometimes you get into your little silo.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, politics aside, this is a business thing. It doesn't make sense to me that you would leave out half of your population's brain power, half of their money, and half of all of their ideas. It doesn't make sense to me. And obviously it didn't make sense to those for the Rise Movement. And so they're here.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we are going to be talking with all these founders that are here with us today in studio about all the work that they're doing right here in Chicago. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch, joined today by Scott Catoon, CEO of Technori. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Today, we're hanging out with Scott Catoon, who's the CEO of Technori and the host of the Technori podcast on WGN Plus. Head to your favorite app store and get the WGN Plus app so you can hear that and many other podcasts, or just head to the website, WGNradio.com. You can hear all the podcasts. So today we're talking with people who are doing very, very cool things right here in Chicago and are connected to Technori, because that's what Technori does. That's Technori's rub. So we have in studio with us now Adam Bianco, who is the CMO at Tide Spin. Now, we all know about Tide, detergent king that it is, right? We all know about Tide. But Tide Spin is a little bit different piece of that. And as we were talking about in the last segment, it is kind of its own thing. It has gone outside the building. It's there at 1871 doing its own thing and starting a very, very new take on this very large known brand. Welcome to the program, Adam.
Well, thanks for having me.
So tell us about Tide Spin.
Tide Spin is a new app-based laundry and dry clean delivery service.
Does that mean I don't have to do laundry anymore?
That means you never have to do laundry again.
Yes!
It's perfect. Everyone's least favorite chore. We make it very easy for you. Just with just a few clicks, we will pick it up, clean it, and then drop back off 2 days later. Very easy.
So I have a couple of questions for you. Yeah. As a person who doesn't know how to do laundry myself, it's important that I know where to pick up everything and drop everything off.
Uh-huh.
I noticed, so at the gym that I work out in, I actually live in the suburbs, so in Glen Ellen, there's a gym, Helltrek, and they had a Tide Spin little drop-off place there. And so there's a couple of vans and stuff you see driving around. How does this work? Is it like dry cleaning and all of the different, Start Shop and a few other different places.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly do I utilize this? Do I download the app? Do I have to drop stuff off at certain locations? Do you pick it up for me? How does it all work?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we are an app. It's all app-based right now. So you can download it from the App Store or the Google Play Store. Download it, you sign up for an account, and it's very simple. You enter your address with a few clicks, you place an order, and then we'll pick it up from you. Currently in this stage, you have to have a secure location to drop off. For instance, if you have a doorman, if you have an entryway that we can have access to, anything like that, you're good to go. We'll pick it up. You do not have to be there, and we'll drop back off in the exact same spot. We are working on different partnerships with gyms and a few things like that. Some people, especially if they're on the suburbs, they may be used to seeing those Tide dry cleaners.
Yep.
That is almost like a sister brand to us. We work with them. We take our clothes to them. They're all Tide certified. They're a different part of Tide. So they're kind of like our brothers and sisters, but Tide Spin is really the delivery service that connects the two.
Gotcha. So that was kind of the segue that I wanted to make here is like, how does Tide work into this? Because, mm-hmm. A lot of the startup companies that we see all the time usually don't have a parent company with a name like Tide. And it can be bureaucratic and it can be slow moving. And there can be all kinds of weird things that go on that you have to follow certain protocols that they do. You mentioned that the Tide locations that are all over the place. How do you interact on a daily basis as a company? How do you interact with them? What's the connection?
Yeah. So just, I guess, a bit of a backstory to it. So our CEO is from P&G and from the parent company. And he had this idea of saying, let's bring Tide Spin. Let's start. There's so many companies that are trying to outsource everything. If it's Uber with, on-demand taxi service, et cetera, that we've seen countless number of times, let's do that for laundry. And so he had this idea and he brought it to Chicago to get away from the mothership in Cincinnati of Tide and P&G. And he brought it to Chicago and really started here as a great test market. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So we're really partnered with Tide and it's kind of a best of both worlds where you have that brand equity that Tide brings. And that's one of our biggest differentiators versus, some other people that are in the space. And we have that branding and backing that with Tide and with P&G, but really a startup and can move very quickly and pivot when we have to. And that's where we come into play is that we are, for the most part, our own startup and living. We started in 1871. Now we have a new office in the South Loop and we're thriving. We just had a record week this past week and it's growing very strongly.
That's awesome.
It is really interesting to see how, to see this really unique situation, right? Mm-hmm. Of this larger brand kind of jutting out into this space. I think that's really interesting. And it's really interesting to see how Tide ID'd this as a place that they wanted to go. So as you said, this is sort of a beginning stage of this. What are the next steps here and what's on the horizon for Tide Spin?
Yeah, so next steps, one of the features, we just actually relaunched the app last month. We took to customers, for the most part, it just looked like a general facelift. But to us, we've worked months to develop the back end, which really gives us the ability to add a bunch of new features that are coming, including one in the near future. Can't give you an exact date yet, but we're looking to work on scheduled delivery. So right now, we just operate 9 to 5. We pick up secure location. But of course, there are plenty of people out there that don't live in central Chicago or downtown with doormen or entryways they can get in. So if you're one of those, and I know plenty of friends and family that are, we are having more of a kind of an on-demand model. So we're doing nighttime pickups from 6 to 10. And so people can schedule a pickup. We'll come pick it up from you. And it's really almost like a door-to-door service. So that's coming on the horizon. That's our big rollout coming soon. And if people are interested in finding out, they can always go to tidespin.com, sign up for their email, and they can get a notification when that's ready to go.
Interesting. I think that is really interesting. And it also seems like there's a lot of Tide, the parent company here, has done a lot in times of disaster, in times of mm-hmm. need and things like that. I remember after Hurricane Katrina, there was, Tide trucks were out like, hey, here's a normal thing you can do to just sort of start feeling normal again and do your laundry and simple things like that. Is that philanthropic arm attached to Tide Spin, or is it a separate things that you're doing to give back?
Yeah, so it's getting there. I mean, that's, of course, such a big part of the Tide brand, and that's really part of Tide Spin. We really take some of the best elements of the Tide brand and try to bring. We have actually a partnership with the Ronald McDonald House, where we offer complimentary services for any family that's staying there. Because just like you mentioned, when they're going there, they're staying there, if it's for a night, if sometimes for months at a time, they want to get into that, like, the normal routine, but also not have to worry about, you know, who's doing the laundry, where's my kid going to get their favorite, you know, shirt, because that, you know, that's what they're attached to. So we do that as a philanthropic element of us, but there's probably much more to come. Definitely.
I think it's almost philanthropic just for the parents, for the college kids. Yeah. Imagine putting these on every single campus across the country.
Not showing up with bags and bags of laundry.
Seriously,
I
used to do it. Every kid, I mean, I still do it, obviously, but every kid shows up with this huge bag full of clothing from like months, and the mom and dad are just like, what do you do here?
Yeah, that's one of the best parts about going home when you're in college or shortly thereafter. You're going home with a bag of laundry
and a home-cooked meal.
And is it geared towards, and is the price point as such where it's really just appealing to that young of a user, or is it also pointing to a little bit older of a user that could maybe use this instead of buying a washer and dryer stackable for their apartment?
Yeah, so it's really quite a mixture. We see, you know, the best thing about the service is that everyone has to do laundry. Not everyone has to use some of these different outsourced, different companies and different solutions, but everyone has to do laundry. Sometimes, you know, half the people do dry cleaning, et cetera, but everyone has to do laundry. So it's really it's a little more for an older demographic that we've seen. People that, if you do have dry cleaning, the prices are very competitive to your local dry cleaner. We just make it more convenient for you. But for laundry, it's fairly, you know, if you have it in unit laundry, sometimes that's going to be a cheaper element. But if you hate the hassle of it, if you have other stuff to do, because if you're, you know, very business focused and career focused, sometimes there's a million other things you can do to, instead of doing your laundry and taking hours out of your day or your week. If you're just want to hang out and spend time with friends, you can do that as well. So we're really a service that takes the pain points of doing and really wasting your time doing the laundry and really make it very easy to a consumer. We have seen that we have college kids that use it, and parents pay for a subscription for their students and for their children. But also we've seen people all the way up until, I'm always surprised when we go to events, we talk to people about it. There's such a range of people from 20s to 70-year-old that are using the service, and then they absolutely love it.
There you go. It works for everybody then.
It's perfect. Yeah. Outsourcing regular life.
Well, I think, and that's always an interesting place where we kind of don't realize something was a hassle sometimes until there's a way to outsource it. And then you're like, oh, well, of course I don't want to do that anymore. Here, take it. Go for it, right? I think that's kind of an interesting spot in the startup world when it's almost addressing a problem we didn't know we had.
Yeah. It's when I first joined 6 months ago, I never even thought about it. I think it's one of those things where when you first talk to people about it, they're like, oh, I've never really thought about outsourcing. And now, for me, it's least commonplace. And that's where we want to get to people, to the point where, like, I never want to do laundry again. And now it's a hassle when I do it. So it's one of those things where I think you turn that light bulb on, like, wow, okay, I'll try this out and see where it goes.
It's like we didn't even know we had the option, and suddenly we do. Here it is.
Exactly.
Adam Bianco, thanks so much for being with us, CMO of Tide Spin. We'll be right back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. We're talking with Scott Catoon today. He's the CEO of Technori, and he has brought a lot of people with him today who are doing really cool business things right here in Chicago. So back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Today, we are hanging out with Scott Catoon. He's the CEO of Technori and host of the Technori podcast on WGN Plus. If you have not listened to that yet, I recommend you do. Head to WGNradio.com or get the WGN Plus app in your favorite app store, and you can check it and all the other podcasts out right there. So, Scott, as we roll along, you brought so many friends with you today. We have with us now Vivek Mehra, who is the CEO of ParkX, which is, I had to look at it for a minute because at first it looks like banking or something. I was like, the Q, it's P-R-Q-E-X, ParkX. But once you say it, you're like, ah, parking, of course, once you say it out loud. And so it is, well, you've raised a couple of dollars right now, is what's happening. You've raised more than $1 million to rent out private parking spots, which is an interesting differentiator because we think about parking tech as being a little more kind of one-off. But in your case, this is sort of a more long-term solution. Tell us about ParkX.
Well, again, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate the opportunity. We are, you're right, so we are a private parking marketplace where individuals and businesses that have parking can rent out their parking spaces hourly, daily, weekly, or monthly. So think about when you're going to work 9 to 5, your parking space is sitting idle, you can now start renting it out. That's as simple as it is. And if you go to neighborhoods or cities where, you know, the commercial parking options are not that available, this is an ideal solution to solve a parking problem like in Wicker Park and Bucktown.
And so this is kind of a little bit of peace of mind where you could almost have a parking spot every day in the same spot. You don't have to kind of drive around looking for where it is or whatever. You could just say, I have this from 9 to 5 while I'm at work, and then the owners come home and they park there. Done.
Absolutely right. So if you think about it, you know, our city of Chicago that I love so much was designed where in the loop everybody thought there would be parking problem. And so there are parking lots and garages. But now the city is expanding and neighborhoods are getting crowded, like Wicker Park, Bucktown, Andersonville, Edgewater. And those areas, those neighborhoods don't have a parking solution. So businesses are suffering. The community is unhappy. There's pollution. And there is no solution. Whereas, with our model, what happens is whenever there's parking, whether it's an individual, business, schools, colleges, churches, and anywhere there's parking, we are able to bring that supply into the community and solve the problem without even spending a dollar.
What I love about this is it's a two-sided marketplace. It reminds me of kind of the Uber deal where you can, honestly, you can supplement your not only your income, but the amount of money that you're paying in a mortgage or rent. If you have a parking spot, but you don't have a car, which is a lot of people in Chicago, I mean, a lot of the people who come down here and park are people like me who drive in from this, you know, from the suburbs. So the idea that you can actually make some money and offset some of the expense of your rent, which is, you know, it's not as high as say New York or San Francisco, but it's certainly not cheap to live in Chicago, is amazing, and you can make some money. But then on the other side, for example, I've told this story when some of the other guys from parking companies were on my show, that I double park when I do the morning show with Steve Grzanich here. This is not a joke. I double park on Michigan Avenue. It's like 5:40 in the morning. I take my little Technori car. We affectionately call it Howard, and I park it right in front of this building with the flashes on, or back there behind the University of Chicago by NBC, and I park and just leave it there because I'm not paying $35 on Illinois. I did today, not normally. There's solutions like this out there. So when you come in from the suburbs, if you look for alternative parking things, you can save 20, 30, 40% of what you would normally pay and not be, you know, tied to the train schedule, which is not always ideal.
Sure. And, you know, this reminds me a lot of Airbnb, too. I have lived in a place that came with a parking spot and did not have a car. You know, I live and work in such a close proximity, it didn't make sense for me to have one. But and I always felt badly about this parking spot is just sitting there empty. So my neighbors would kind of know, I have company, can I park in your spot? Things like that. But I always felt like, oh, I should be renting this out or something like that. So it does, in a way, feel like Airbnb for parking. In a way.
You're absolutely right. So it is very much the Airbnb for parking model. And what you bring up is a very interesting point. This in the city of Chicago, according to their city ordinance, what would happen is developers have been building abundant parking. Like it's required to build more parking than what is needed. So there's a lot of parking in these buildings that is available, but it's just not easy to rent out. That's why we built ParkX, where individuals now can rent out their parking spaces. One of the challenges we faced was, if you think about it, a lot of this parking is locked up behind a gate or a garage door. And it's a little inconvenient for you to wait around to rent and then wait for your renter to arrive and then give a garage door opener to them. So what we also built is a technology that opens the gate and garage door right from within our app. So now, not only can you start sharing your parking space when you're not using it with your friend or family, but also rent it out very conveniently. You know, you rent it out, and for that duration of the rental, the renter can simply reach, you know, the garage door opener, click a button on our app, open the gate or the garage door, park, and when they leave, they'll not be able to come back again without renting again.
See, I had questions for you about logistics because I was envisioning people standing around with the little garage clicker, like, where is this guy?
Yeah.
I got to go to work. Where is he? But you've worked around that, which I think is really great and really interesting. So tell us about this funding round that you've recently had, a round of funding where you've raised $1 million. And so what does that mean to you, and what does that build on the horizon for you?
Yeah, thank you. Yes. So, you know, we bootstrapped this. We are a Chicago-based company. You know, we started with completely investing our own savings into this company. Came a long way. When we launched last year, we saw a lot of demand, a lot of traction. You know, today we are over 10,000 users, active users on a platform. We get tens of thousands of users coming to our platform every month. So we started, you know, we have proven that there is a market for this. There are people who want to rent their space, and there are people who are always looking for parking. Once we had proven that out, we wanted to expand further in Chicago, but also then go beyond Chicago to other cities where this problem exists, where we can help them solve it, but also grow our business. So that's when we went out to raise capital. We went out to raise $500,000. We were very successful, got oversubscribed. You know, we had over 1.5 in commitment and even more from other areas. We closed 1.3. And this will get us to expand out further in Chicago, as well as go to other cities like Milwaukee and Madison next.
I was going to say, that's actually the interesting thing is I have to give you some serious kudos, because there's a little backstory with ParkX. I was talking to you, I mean, it was right before I had acquired Technori, so he was still bootstrapping. Money was coming out of his pocket, literally, like everything. And the other cool part is that this is somewhat common, but sometimes not, is he's also what you call a technical CTO or CEO. He's both the CTO of the company as well as the CEO. Non-technical CEOs, which are probably more common, are not. It's harder for us. I'm one of them. Non-technical, I can code myself barely out of a paper bag. Do not have the funds to build a product that has the full tool that you're talking about, where it can open the garage doors and things like that. It's very hard to do. And you bootstrapped this to the point where when you talked about working with us at one point, it was, you know, pennies and dollars, whatever we could possibly do to get to this point. And then we did a Technori event in Milwaukee for Startup Milwaukee, and the Generator was doing one, and you're a Generator company.
Yes.
And our investors, as well as some of the investors that ended up putting money into this company, came to Technori afterward and said, ParkX killed it. Just an absolutely unbelievable presentation at Startup Milwaukee. And obviously now here you are. To see the growth you've had in the last 6 months is just incredible.
Thank you.
And where are you seeing, because there are so many different options, you know, as you said, you can do hourly, daily, monthly, yearly, whatever. Where do you see the most users? Are they that hourly or are they the monthly?
So currently we're seeing more monthly. We're almost 70% of our revenue is coming through the monthly. And those are mostly people who are commuting to work. So we're seeing people who go to West Loop, for example. As you already know, Google has moved there. McDonald's is moving in. There's huge surge of traffic in those neighborhoods. Obviously, there's a lot of good restaurants there. All that traffic that is, you know, causing congestion there is resulting in a parking demand. And that's where we come in. So 70% of our revenue right now is monthly, 30% transient. But in the future, we see that the transient would be an even bigger opportunity for us, where we'd be able to solve parking problems in neighborhoods for even short term, when you're going to restaurants or when you're visiting a friend, and in that building you'd be able to park very conveniently for maybe a few less dollars than other options that might be available a few blocks away.
How does the pay compare? How does it compare if I'm, you know, a lot of people I know actually live out in Schaumburg or Glen Ellen, and they drive in every day. What would it look like for me to have a monthly pass through ParkX versus, say, renting a space at, you know, one of these, you know, any one of these towers that have?
Absolutely. Good question again. So, again, we don't set the price. So the owners are setting the price. So they may set a price that is, you know, it could be anywhere from $5 to $50 for a day, or it could be $150 to $300. And then, you know, when we had the Cubs World Series, they were listing parking from $50 to $300 for an evening.
Oh, to live in Wrigleyville during that. Oh my gosh.
So, but in general, the owners tend to you know, list their parking spaces for a lot less than what's out there. So in Streeterville, for example, where I live, parking in the other areas, you know, like parking lots and garages, goes for $55 to $65 a day. Individuals are renting it out from $25 to $30 a day.
So it's a huge difference.
It's a big
difference. In some cases, yes.
And are all the spots residential, or are there businesses that are doing this too?
It's residential, individuals like you and me, businesses, restaurants, for example, law offices, dentists when they don't need their space. So let's say if you are a dentist and you are done at 5 p.m., then you can be renting out that parking outside your dental office to a restaurant nearby. So also schools, churches, we have nonprofits working with us. Yeah.
Very cool.
There's a lot to think about with parking, though.
Yes.
Sometimes we just think about it as driving in circles till someone moves. But nonetheless, you've thought it through and thought about a lot of different scenarios. Very, very cool. Vivek Mehra, CEO of ParkX, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate All right. We'll be back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today and sharing part of your Saturday with us. Always grateful to you for that. Hanging out today with Scott Catoon, who's the CEO of Technori and host of the Technori podcast here on WGN Plus. You can find that on the WGN Plus app or at WGNradio.com. As we have gone through the show today, we've been meeting lots of people connected to Technori, because Technori is all about the movers and shakers of the business world here in Chicago. And we are joined now by Ellie Barmazel, who is co-founder of the Rise Movement, which is a little different than the other two founders that we've talked to today, because in your case, it is a little bit more speaking to, shall we say delicately, the divide and breakdown in communication right now happening socially and politically. I think no matter how we voted this time around, we can all agree that there's conversation that needs to happen that ain't happening. And there's many places where that's being facilitated or not being facilitated, as the case may be. And one of those is in the business sector. As we talk about inclusion and diversity and the importance of having a variety of voices represented in our business endeavors, sometimes it's hard to know exactly what the verbs are. Like, what is the thing that's going to be done? I think a lot of people, we all agree that's a good idea and that's something we want. But I think sometimes we don't necessarily understand the absolute essential business importance of doing so, which I could rant about for hours, but I'm going to let you talk now. Hi, Ellie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you, Amy and Scott, for having me in today to talk about Rise Movement.
So tell us about it.
Yeah. So this idea was born on November 9th, the morning after the elections. And so you can say that we are very much still a baby. But I, as I was explaining to some of the other founders in the room, we're running, but we're not yet necessarily chewing solid foods. We're sprinting, though. And the impetus behind Rise Movement, regardless of who you voted for, to your point, Amy, is that we recognize that we're really focused right now as a nation on the things that divide us. And it's a distraction from pointing the country in the direction that it needs to head. And we can only do that by recognizing the areas of unity. And economic development, workforce development, that's a huge area where we can all agree that if Americans aren't working, it doesn't really matter what other policies are put in place. We can't have any type of economic growth without Americans being put to work. So we're doing a few different things at Rise Movement. One of the big pieces that we recognized was lacking, particularly in the Great Lakes and Rust Belt regions of America, was a lack of listening. And I approach things from a human-centered design lens, where everything starts with the end user, which in this case is the average American. It's the voter. And no one was listening to them. And you need, in order to build, you need trust, and you need transparency, and you need community. And that didn't really happen this last election cycle. So we're trying to do that, listen to the needs of people on the ground in these regions and beyond, and then also thinking about how we solve for the myriad of challenges that are coming in our economy, chief among them, how automation is going to disrupt the economy. And, you know, by some estimates, we're looking at 25 million jobs lost over the next 9 years. So how are we collectively as a business community thinking about that?
What I think is interesting here is, one, you talk about user-centered, design-centered philosophy that you've taken here. This was literally born in Genevieve Thiers, who's the co-founder of Sitter City and Chime by Sitter City, in her living room. The day after, basically, they had this big meeting. They invited all of like the major tech players in Chicago and said, hey, you know, what do you think? How are we going to do this? And so I think that that's one thing that's unique. And the other part is you're not, this isn't just about a money thing. This is a thing where you're talking to and have access to because of the co-founders and the community that you guys kind of spurn from, where we can talk to minority leaders, female leaders, regular everybody, everyday people, as well as the people in the tech communities who are on the cutting edge of all of these automation and all this tech stuff that we talk about daily in here that are going to cut into jobs. In fact, the co-founder of your company creates things like Chime and sort of a, that's not automation, but it is sort of the gig economy, which does take jobs from people. And the idea that all of these people are sort of coming together and saying, we're going to figure out a way to predict what's coming next, to know where to be and to help raise awareness so that we all are speaking from the same sort of vantage point. That's what I think is really cool about what you guys are doing. So I'm excited to see where this goes as far as beyond just the tech community.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, it's like it's getting people to be on the same side, like rallying people who might be disagreeing to point them all towards the same goal. Like everybody will be hit by the fact that automation is going to disrupt a lot of jobs. So no matter how you voted or where you fall on things economically, I think everybody can get behind that. So it is both unifying and effective and necessary, right, as we're doing it. So even though you, as you said, you're running and sprinting, but not yet having solid food, which I love, that's a great way to describe a new company. So what are the solutions you're thinking about of implementing first?
So there's a couple different pieces that we're implementing simultaneously side by side, and we see them as kind of feeding one another. The first is that we're doing a series of listening tours throughout the regions that I mentioned, as well as some of the areas on both coasts, listening to voters about the issues that matter most to them. And something that we're rolling out to support that is actually an online app. It's going to be a tool that it's almost like a Tinder-like interface where you swipe left or right and give us an indication of the issues that you feel are most directly impacting you. And you'll be able to see then, as a nation, as people continue to use the app, where are we finding the most alignment, regardless of where you live? And we've got some hypotheses, but we'll let the app prove that. So there's that piece of listening to constituents and giving them voice and agency. And then on the flip side, we've got a brilliant policy director who's an economist who's looking at the jobs piece. So we're convening think tanks. We've met with Google. We're doing a think tank in the Bay Area in March. We're going to do one in either April or May in Cleveland. So we're thinking about how do we bring together what we're hearing on the ground from constituents and feed that into organizations that are focusing on the economy and job creation.
Amy, I have to tell you, this blows me away on like a million different levels, but I don't know if you know this. I used to work as a consultant in different political areas. So we worked with, whether it was Democrat, Republican, whatever, to see, and this isn't long ago, this is like 2013, 14, to see all of a sudden that we're talking about mobile apps and Tinder-style political apps, and you look at like one of our previous guests was a ballot ready, the tech that is now going into politics that forever, I mean, we still use the same operating system for like the early 90s mm-hmm. for voting. The idea that all of a sudden, finally, we're starting to get the tech community involved rather than just like picketing and protesting and going around saying things and posting on social media, but actually getting together in a room and saying, here's what we're working on. How can we work with you? This isn't, like you said before, this is a bipartisan, right?
Yes.
So it's not about picking sides. It's about, here's the reality. Consumers want this technology. They want voice activated this. They want smart that. What are we going to do before we get into this jam? What are we going to do to change it? And that's mm-hmm. to see tech actually not just be something we talk about, but something we're actually utilizing to gather information to make decisions, to me is like maybe, hopefully, knock on plastic or wood, wherever it is, turning the corner to be kind of a more informed group of people.
Yeah, agreed. I've talked about the Countable app before on the show, and that's kind of similar, that Tinder-like, where you swipe, what do you think about this? And it's kind of a yes or a no. And if you support this issue, here's some reasons why you should support it. Here's some reasons why you should not. And you kind of, it's bite-sized, and it's by no means, totally all of it, and you still have to do your homework. But nonetheless, it gives you a jumping off point to do that information. Because I've long complained about, we've gotten to this moment where we, and I'm going to do some radio air quotes, the unthinkable here, the speaking out on Facebook, which is drives me crazy. Because my thing is like, don't complain unless you come to me with a solution. You can sit there and complain and speak out on Facebook all day, but it's not really doing anything. At the end of the day, you need to do something. You need to contact a lawmaker. You need to organize the community. You need to do these things to actually make change happen, which is what's so interesting to me about Rise Movement. So you come also from a political background, Ellie, and you came from, you were a campaigner and staffer on the Rahm administration. And so at first glance, this seems like a shift in things for you. But as I'm sitting here listening to you talk, it doesn't sound like it's going to be changing that much in terms of what your focus is and the work you're doing.
Yeah, for the past 18 months, I've spent my time traveling around the world, looking at social innovation models and talking to people who are disrupting different areas, but through a social lens and thinking about impact, right? And whether or not this is a positive thing when you think about our president-elect, what he did is he disrupted politics as we know it. And the only way that you counter disruption is with more disruption and responsible disruption. And so this is a really interesting marriage of my background in politics and also my understanding of design and social impact, and thinking about what does responsible disruption look like, and how do we give the end user, the American voter, the opportunity to be catalytic in change. And, you know, this rise of social media activism where you shout into your echo chambers, we see what good that does us, 0%. And it's important for us to raise our voices, to march in the streets, to exercise our First Amendment rights to do that. And then it's a yes and. How do we then harness that energy and give people an opportunity to engage and be part of the solution? And quite frankly, technology is going to be a critical component of that. And that's really where Rise Movement is thinking, is how do we tech enable people to be catalytic in shifting the nation in the direction they'd like to see it move.
So the one question that I had when we first, you know, kind of went into this is essentially, you mentioned that people will talk into their echo chamber and then nothing happens. What is the one thing you guys are going to be able to do other than just the listening tours to be able to make action out of something? How do we turn people's anger or happiness or whatever in energy and actually make it do something?
That's a fantastic question. We absolutely, once we've captured the energy, then what? And there's a few different pieces of it. But what we'd like to do is then be able to give these communities, there's a bit of a grassroots element to this as well. We're organizing currently in 12 cities and growing. And so we're giving these local communities that are organizing some tools and resources to organize around the issues that they care about with tech support. And then we want to also help diversify the candidates that are running for office. You know, we've got a persistent non-voter issue in this country when 50% of America stays home on a presidential election. And of the 50% that does go to the polls, when a million of them don't vote, we've got a fundamentally broken system. And part of that is that people aren't feeling inspired by the candidates that they see in front of them. They don't see them as a reflection of themselves in their communities. So by helping communities locally organized, we're hoping to also identify new talent that wouldn't have necessarily fed into the pipeline for elected office and help train them and help them fund their run for office.
Indeed. Well, we will all keep an eye on the Rise Movement. Thank you so much, Ellie Barmazel, co-founder of that organization. Thanks for being with us. And Scott Catoon, CEO of Technori and host of the Technori podcast on WGN Plus. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break and get you to news and then turn things over to King John here in just a bit on 720 WGN.